Hi, this is Steve Ide for the Research Bureau Engel. Teachers' unions are the most powerful interest group in America. They dominate K-12 public education unlike any other interest group does with any other institution or policy arena. Between 1989 and 2009, teachers' unions spent more money on federal elections than any other group, and their influence is even greater at the state and local level. In Massachusetts' 2006 and 2008 elections, teachers' unions were the number one donor. There are 71,000 public school teachers in Massachusetts, and 97% are unionized. At the local level, teachers' unions are more involved in school board elections than any other interest group. Teachers vote at much higher rates than other citizens do because they have a direct material stake in the outcomes. This also goes for right-to-work states, where, although union membership cannot be made a condition of employment, membership rates are still high. 20 out of the 23 American states with right-to-work laws have a teacher unionization rate of at least 50%. 84% of teachers in Alabama are unionized. Even in Texas, which has a law that formally bans collective bargaining in public employment, 65% of teachers are union members. The claim here is not that teachers' unions hand-pick every single school board member in America. Certainly other factors play a big role. Incumbency, for example, is a significant advantage in local school board elections, just as it is for members of Congress or state legislatures. There is some evidence that, once elected, school board incumbents become less beholden to the unions. In the 1960s, when unionization rates in private industry reached their high watermark, only 10% of government workers were unionized. At present, 79% of all public school teachers are unionized and 65% are covered by collective bargaining. What happened between then and now? The laws changed. In the early 20th century, progressive reformers wrested control of public schools from urban bosses and machines and gave it to professional administrators. From that point up through about the 1960s, school administrators were the dominant players in public education. Then, beginning at around 1960, governments began passing new labor laws recognizing public employee unions. Examples include New York City's so-called Little Wagner Act of 1959, President Kennedy's 1962 executive order recognizing federal employee unions, and in 1959, Wisconsin enacted the first state-level labor law for public employee unions. History helps us to understand what teacher influence means. It means less influence for school administrators. The best way to measure union power, more accurate than election spending totals, is to survey the sheer number of rules in teacher contracts. For management, discretion is power. For unions, rules are a measure of power and success. Teacher contracts are notoriously lengthy and complex, composed of dozens of rules such as last hired, first fired protections for senior teachers, provisions that grant the right to transfer into open positions to teachers already within the system, and provisions that weaken teacher evaluation systems and make the process of teacher dismissal so lengthy and complicated as to ensure that no principal or administrator would even bother to attempt it. Each of these rules had to be granted, at some point, by management to labor, and often in lieu of a concession in the way of salary and benefits. In a non-unionized situation, when times are tough, workers simply don't get raises. In a unionized situation, workers can expect some other benefits, such as a less rigorous evaluation process. This is, in general, a fundamental problem with public employee unions. They blur the line between policy questions and fiscal questions. If you want to try to make changes in the education system, you have to pay the unions for the right to enact them. If resources are limited and you are unable to increase salaries, you will likely be forced to grant some of the power originally entrusted by the public to elected and appointed government officials. If you do this enough times, public employee unions effectively turn into a fourth branch of government, which is a situation that unfortunately now prevails in much of America. This has been Steve Ide for the Research Bureau Engel on AM 830 WCRN.